Okay, good evening again, and I hope you've all enjoyed your dinner. So what I'd like to share with you now is a bit more heavy going, and we're looking at the characteristics of Mahayana wisdom. Now, for some of you, you may or may not be too aware of the term Mahayana. Generally, it's just referring to a branch of Buddhism. Most often you'll see that Buddhism is referred to as Tibetan Buddhism, Theravadan Buddhism, and Mahayana Buddhism. And in Mahayana Buddhism, what it tends to refer to is the branch of Buddhism that over time had spread from India to China, and then from China also over to Japan and Korea, and now, of course, to the US. But of course, with the transmission of the Dharma, as always, there will be differences. So Mahayana Buddhism in Japan and Korea is still slightly different to what you would see in China, Taiwan, and so forth. And same with Tibetan Buddhism, because Tibetan Buddhism is also classified within Mahayana, because it's based on the teachings and the texts that they follow. But of course, given the culture and all that, as Buddhism spread, it also adapted. So you will see some differences, but the basic tenets of the teachings are consistent. And so what I'd like to look at today is Mahayana wisdom. So this teaching, because we've only got a short 30 minutes, so I'm trying to give you maximum impact, it comes from a very valuable teaching by Venerable Ingsun, and this is the late Venerable Ingsun. This particular teaching comes from his work called Synopsis on the Practice of Wisdom in Buddhism. Now, this particular teaching is very lengthy, and it's a very comprehensive teaching on wisdom, what it is, the definition of wisdom in Buddhism terms, and actually how to develop it as a practice as well. But I can't go through this whole text, so what I've done is I've taken an excerpt out, and focus of tonight's talk will be on the four key characteristics of true wisdom in the Mahayana teachings. Now, when people hear about Buddhism, one of the first things, particularly in the West, that they associate it with is meditation. Now, meditation is a very important aspect of Buddhism. It actually forms the foundation for the development of wisdom. And wisdom, or otherwise you'll hear it as insight, is the key that unlocks the door to liberation. So it's not actually meditation that will lead to liberation, it's wisdom. In the Buddhist sense, it's wisdom that leads to liberation. But you need the bedrock foundation of meditation in order to develop this wisdom. Now, the process to develop this wisdom actually takes a lot of effort and diligence. So that's why you had the pre-dinner talk on diligence, to remind you of its importance. Now, when we talk about it, sometimes you need to think, where am I going to find the confidence and the motivation so that I can be diligent? Because the practice to develop wisdom, for those of you who are doing meditation, you'll realize that it's actually not that easy, and it takes a lot of time. So to go a step further to develop wisdom, that also takes a lot of time. So what we need is we need to find a motivational force that can constantly give us the drive to practice our meditation and then to cultivate this important wisdom. So the way to develop that motivation is to firmly understand what this wisdom is. And that's why this particular talk is looking at the characteristics of wisdom. Now, if we look at religion in a broader perspective, so I'm now moving beyond Buddhism, when we take a broader perspective of religion, every religion has their unique element. And for Buddhism, what sets it apart is this aspect of wisdom. Now, this is not to say that other religions don't have wisdom. However, you find that in most of the other religions, the focus tends to be more on compassion or charity or faithful devotion. For Buddhism, what our focus relies on is wisdom, because ultimately we need it in order to gain liberation. Wisdom, in fact, from the Buddhist perspective, wisdom forms the dividing line between our mundane world and the liberated transcendental world. So what this means is that all the virtues of the transcendental world, and as well as the different types of sages, are all on account of wisdom. Now, a sage in the Buddhist sense is someone that has realized the truth of emptiness, and as a result, they have gained liberation. So that's why wisdom forms the dividing line between an ordinary being and a sage. Now, sometimes you'd like to think about this. I find it might be easier if you think about it with a worldly example. And being from Australia, my brother is a specialist doctor. And so in order to become a normal doctor, you have a certain level of requirement of education. But then to become a specialist, there is a further requirement in education and special training. Now, once you pass that further requirement, then you're admitted into that speciality and you can train as a specialist neurosurgeon or, you know, obstetrician and so forth. So this accreditation, if you think about it, gives us an indication of a minimum skill and a minimum amount of knowledge and understanding. So, similarly, when we attain this wisdom in the Buddhist sense, it basically says that we have the required minimum understanding about wisdom in order for us to become a sage. However, like all specialists, some are better than others. So, similarly, we have different types of sages in Buddhism. So you've got the Sravakayana sages, and you've got the Pratyeka Buddha sages, you've got the Bodhisattvas at their various degrees and attainments, and of course you have the Buddhas themselves. So I hope you can start to see the importance of wisdom in Buddhism. If you want to gain liberation and to become a liberated sage in Buddhism, you need to have wisdom. It's not an option. It's not an either or. There's no doubt about it, you need wisdom. And hopefully that'll give you the motivation to practice and attain that wisdom. Now, in a worldly sense, when we talk about wisdom, it often relates to knowledge and experience. And the Oxford Dictionary, given that I'm from Australia, it defines wisdom as the quality of having experience, knowledge, and good judgment, the quality of being wise. Now, I did a bit of research, and it seems that in America, you tend to use the Merriam-Webster dictionary a bit more. So, in that particular dictionary, it defines wisdom as accumulated philosophical or scientific learning, as knowledge, ability to discern inner qualities and relationships, insight, good sense, which is judgment, and generally accepted belief. Now, within these definitions, the dictionary definition that aligns relatively well to the Buddhist meaning is point number two. In Buddhism, having a vast knowledge of something or having great worldly experiences is not wisdom. So just to clarify that in the Buddhist sense, having vast knowledge of worldly affairs and having a great experience of worldly affairs does not equate to having wisdom. Rather, for us Buddhists, wisdom is actually defined as the ability to analyze, to investigate and discern phenomena to the point where you fully understand phenomena at both the conventional worldly level and at the ultimate level. So in Buddhism, this ultimate level is actually beyond duality. It's beyond language as well. So this is sort of like visiting a place for the very first time. So if you're planning a trip to somewhere that you've never been before, you'll research on how to get there, what the culture's like, what are the sights and the, you know, the food and so forth. All of that is still part of your development of your understanding of the place. But when you actually arrive there and immerse in the culture, see the sights for yourself, that actual experience of that place is actually beyond words. It's something very personal. And this is the same with true wisdom. When we awaken to this ultimate truth, at that time, it's also a very personal experience. We can try and explain it as best we can, but the experience of it itself is beyond duality. Now, even though this realization of wisdom, of true wisdom, is beyond description, in Mahayana Buddhism, true wisdom can be understood by four special qualities. Now, this type of wisdom is what the Buddha is trying to help us to develop. So the first quality is that faith and wisdom functions as one. The second quality is the merging of wisdom and compassion. The third quality is that there must be a balance between tranquility and wisdom. And the fourth quality is the sameness of the truth and wisdom. So these might sound a bit abstract, but we'll go through these one by one. So hopefully by the end of the talk, you get a good understanding of what Mahayana wisdom should possess. Now, first off, you may think, what does wisdom have to do with faith? In Buddhism, when we're talking about wisdom, it actually cannot be separated from faith. They're not two separate things that run off on their own different tracks. Generally speaking, at the start, a practitioner requires faith to develop their wisdom. You need to have an understanding and a level of confidence in this thing called Buddhist wisdom in order to drive you to practice and want to attain it yourself. You must actually believe in it in order to really put in the effort. However, as your practice progresses and your wisdom starts to develop, it then affirms what you first understood. And it actually provides a confirmation. So that actually then gives you further confidence that I am on the right track. So that's how wisdom and faith work together hand in hand. And as you progress, this faith then continually spurs you on and gives you that motivation. And your wisdom, as it grows, solidifies your faith. Ultimately, when you achieve this pure wisdom, this true wisdom of the Mahayana, at this point, your faith and your wisdom functions as one. So the two are interrelated. They're not separate. The Bodhisattva Manjushri, as described in the Mahayana Sutras, is representative of great wisdom. Now, this is a common picture that you might find, and here, Manjushri, you can see, holds both a sword here. He has a scroll in his hand and he sits on a lion. So these are all very common symbols to mark this particular bodhisattva. And this bodhisattva is representative of wisdom. However, Manjushri not only expounds and reveals the truth and the teachings about the true nature of all phenomena, he also emphatically encourages practitioners to develop their faith in the Mahayana and make the Bodhi vow. And the Bodhi vow is actually faith in the Mahayana. So what this particular bodhisattva is showing us, Manjushri's practice shows us that we need to make the Bodhi vow, which embodies right faith in the Mahayana, and to cultivate wisdom to strengthen that Bodhi vow. Only in this way can great Bodhi be attained. And this great Bodhi is the state where faith and wisdom functions as one in the Mahayana practice. Now, this aspect of faith and wisdom is also found in the Sravakayana teachings as well. Now, in the Sravakayana teachings, there are faith-based practitioners and wisdom-based practitioners. And what this means is that some practitioners will tend to start off, and at the start, they're more inclined to faith-based practices. For the wisdom-based practitioners, they're more inclined to Dharma-based practices. But once these practitioners progress and they attain enlightenment, they accomplish what is called pure and true faith in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, and the Noble Precepts. Now, these four aspects of realized faith represents what the Sravakayana stage of where faith and wisdom operates as one. Now, at this stage, they would have also attained to partial enlightenment as well. So, in short, faith gives us the drive to practice and to develop wisdom. And in turn, as we learn more about the object, as we understand it better, we know its true value and function and its usefulness, and so on. This developing wisdom then solidifies our faith. This is the first quality of true wisdom in the Mahayana. Now, the second quality of true wisdom is that great compassion and profound wisdom merge together as one. So bodhisattvas can attain true wisdom because they possess deep sympathy and great vows to practice compassion even after they have thoroughly awakened to the nature of all dharmas. Now, what this means is that after realizing the truth of emptiness, they do not immediately just seek nirvana and just gain complete liberation. Instead, they utilize this wisdom and engage in more deeds to benefit and help sentient beings. Now, through this process, their loving kindness and compassion actually becomes even more widespread, and their practices become more extensive and skillful, and therefore their wisdom also becomes more and more profound. We can also think of compassion in another way. It is important that compassion plays a significant and key role in Mahayana Buddhism because it is a counterbalancing item to arrogance. Compassion accords with being selfless. Now, this means when we do things out of compassion, our mind is focused on benefiting others and it's not actually focused on ourselves. So it's actually being selfless. Pure knowledge, on the other hand, can potentially give rise to arrogance, which is a form of self-attachment. Therefore, as our wisdom develops and grows, there is also the potential for arrogance and attachment to develop as well. And that is why in the Mahayana, compassion is very important. It can counteract arrogance and help our minds and our hearts to open up. Now, recently I was speaking with a friend, and her health coach was telling her that I don't think you'll be very successful as a professional health coach. And she said, why? She goes, aren't I compassionate enough? I really want to help people. The coach said, oh yeah, you're very compassionate, but you're not arrogant enough. And she goes, what? And he goes, yeah, the people out there, you need to have that assertiveness and that show that you are better, head honcho, so to speak. Then they'll listen. And she was thinking, oh, but I'm a Buddhist. So fortunately, when I was speaking to her, she said she'll just take that as a compliment that her practice in compassion is actually working. So she says, I'll think of another way to work on her health coaching future. But I reminded her that compassion is very important to develop ourselves spiritually. And arrogance is actually a defilement that can really hinder our practice. So in Buddhism, arrogance has always been defined as impure and a defilement that we should try to get rid of. Now, when arrogance or the idea of the self, the attachment to the self, gets bigger and compassion then becomes weaker. On the other hand, when compassion becomes boundless, then our arrogance, that attachment to the self, can be melted away. So it's important that in the perfect wisdom of the Mahayana, it must have this quality of great compassion. So this is the second quality of true wisdom in the Mahayana. So now we move to the third quality. Now, when we're undertaking the Mahayana path, if our practice in meditation becomes too biased, so we get too focused in the practice of meditation, such that the attainment of tranquility in the mind is very strong, but then our wisdom is weak, or vice versa, we neglect the practice of meditation and just focus on wisdom so that we gain a lot of understanding and we're developing our wisdom. In both of these scenarios, it's not ideal. And if you have a bias in either side, either tranquility or wisdom, ultimately it will not lead to the attainment of true wisdom. When the wisdom of discerning and decision-making is strong and yet our tranquility is insufficient, this is like a candle in the wind. It flickers about. It can still illuminate, but what we see is not very clear because the light is not steady. When we actually develop our wisdom along with tranquility, the tranquility gained from meditation is actually like a lampshade that can actually help to block out the wind, which allows the practice of wisdom to shine steadily and illuminate things more clearly. If our meditation is very strong, on the other hand, so previously we neglected meditation, so like a candle in the wind. If we now over-focus on meditation and we go into the deep states of meditation and our practice in wisdom is actually weak, what this does, it provides us with a potential trap. This is because deep states of meditation can actually give rise to a unique form of stillness that results in an extremely sublime experience. So within that experience, the mind and body actually becomes filled with a sense of freedom and bliss and joy. Now, once you're in that state, it can be quite enchanting And some people will then think, oh, is this nirvana? And they'll just think, oh, maybe I'll just sit here for a bit longer and longer. And what happens is this enchantment actually causes them to create an obstacle to their further development of wisdom. And that is why in the Buddhist scriptures, it's commonly mentioned that the very deep states of meditation actually do not accord with wisdom and is unable to bring forth enlightenment and awakening. So this is like the story of Asanga, Vasubandhu and Buddha Shija. So these three are brothers, and Asanga and Vasubandhu are actually probably some of you may have heard about them before. So they're great scholars and great practitioners of the past. Now what happened was these three brothers had a pact, because their practice was to go to Maitreya's Pure Land, which is in the inner court of the Tushita heaven. But what happened was they said, whoever gets there first, which means whoever dies and goes there first, you then have to come back and let us know, is it legit? Is there such a place? Okay, you got to come back and tell us, are we practicing the right thing? So what happened? Buddha Shija was the first to pass away. And Asanga and Vasubandhu were waiting a day, 2 days, a week, a month, years, and not a word. So they started to think, oh, are we on the right path? Is there such a thing? Later what happened was, there are various versions, but one version is that Asanga, having also practiced to deep states of meditation, where he also gained supernatural powers, he then went up to the Tushita heaven to look for his brother. And what happened was he found his brother, but Buddha Shija was in the outer court, not the inner court. Now, in the Tushita heaven, you have the inner court, which is where the Maitreya Bodhisattva currently presides and is teaching the Dharma. The outer court is like any of the other heavens, where it's just full of bliss. So he never made it to the inner court because he was distracted by all the bliss and enjoyment of the outer court. So this is like the deep states of meditation. It can be a very distracting force against the progression in your development of wisdom. So if you think, oh, the Tushita heaven is a bit too far away, a closer example is my own experience. Now, have you been to Tokyo Disney Sea? No?
Where is it?
In Tokyo, there's Disneyland and there's a Disney Sea. And I went there a long, long time ago, over 10 years ago, when I still had hair. And my friends and I had planned to go on every single ride that day. But what happened was, after the second ride, we enjoyed it so much, so we lined up again. And just like Disneyland, some of the rides, when you line up, it takes you like an hour or so. We went on that ride 4 times. So we wasted the whole day just on that particular ride, and we completely trashed our plan to go on every single ride. So even on our current world, you know, even Disneyland and Disney Sea can distract us, let alone the deep and blissful states of meditation. So always bear in mind that the deep states of meditation can be very alluring, and sometimes people even mistaken it for nirvana. And in this case, the consequences can be very detrimental. Because once you think that you've attained nirvana, you don't think there's any further, there's no more further practice needed. And so you completely obstruct your future progress. So please bear in mind that along the path of practice, there will be stages where you tend to focus a bit more on wisdom, and sometimes you focus a bit more on meditation. However, ultimately, the two must be in good balance. So always bear this in mind. This balance between wisdom and tranquility is actually attained at a very profound level on the Bodhisattva path. And Nagarjuna says that Bodhisattvas of the seventh bhumi, called the stage of equilibrium between meditation and wisdom, these Bodhisattvas have meditation and wisdom that are in what we call good, perfect balance. So even though this state is very far from us at the moment, but we need to be aware of this characteristic now, so that as we practice, we always bear this important point in mind. So last, we come to the fourth quality of true wisdom in the Mahayana. Now, when a practitioner attains the wisdom, this true wisdom that realizes the profound truth relating to the nature of all dharmas, this is what we would also call the arising of wisdom. Now, this state is conventionally described as a duality. So you have the subject, which is the wisdom that can lead to realization, and then you have the object, which is the truth to be realized. However, as I said before, when you actually experience this state where true wisdom arises, it actually transcends duality. So when your true wisdom causes you to realize the truth, at this point, you experience the sameness of the truth and wisdom. Now here, truth refers to the doctrines on the truth of emptiness and so forth. The two become indistinguishable. Now, it might be a bit hard to understand at this particular point. In the Avatamsaka Sutra, it says that there is no wisdom as subject that realizes the truth, and no truth as the object to be realized. So to help you understand this a bit better, let me take you through the process of eating a fruit that you've never tried before. So, in Australia we have the medium berry. I hope none of you have eaten it. Do you know what a medium berry is? Okay, so this will work. So I'll give you a description of it. The medium berry is very small, smaller than a red currant. Colour-wise, it's white with little flecks of grey on it, so that from a distance it looks almost like a light purple colour. When you eat it, the texture is quite spongy like a marshmallow. It's a little bit sweet, however, at the end you get a bit of a herb rosemary flavour. Interesting? Yeah? The berry itself is very lightweight. If you put it in water, it floats. Okay. So have I given you enough of an explanation that you can imagine what it is? Is this what you imagined? Yes? No? Okay. So, this process of explaining to you what this berry is like learning about wisdom. You know, the Buddha told us that emptiness, non-discrimination, non-duality and so forth. This is giving us description of wisdom from different aspects. Just like what I was trying to tell you, its taste, its texture, its colour and so forth. But for you at this present time, you still haven't realised the medium berry because you haven't eaten it, you haven't touched it, you haven't seen it for yourself. When you actually come to Australia and you get hold of a medium berry and you touch it and you taste it, you can then confirm what I have told you. It's marshmallowy, herby, rosemary, sweet flavour and so forth. At that point, that's when you realise the medium berry. So that's what this is referring to in terms of the sameness of the truth and wisdom. At the point when you realize, when your true wisdom arises, all that you've learnt about what is this truth merges and confirms your understanding with your experience. So this is the fourth quality. So these four qualities of wisdom in the Mahayana, there must be the aspect of faith, of compassion, of meditation, and the sameness with the principles and doctrines on the truth. Now, among them, the merging of wisdom and compassion is unique to the wisdom in the Mahayana. The other three can be found in the wisdom of the Sravakayana practice as well. And what this highlights is that the Mahayana wisdom is not actually an abstract notion of wisdom that can only distinguish between things. It's not a thought process. It's not a bias or rational, overly rational type of discernment. Instead, because we have faith, compassion, the meditative power of tranquility, so that means we have clarity of mind as well, what this indicates is that the cultivation of wisdom in the Mahayana is actually fully imbued with spiritual life. And this practice in the Mahayana, this wisdom, is actually something that embodies boundless virtues as well. So there are the virtues of compassion, of generosity, and also of diligence. So I hope you can start to understand that when we talk about wisdom in the Mahayana and in Buddhism in general, it's actually a multifaceted aspect. And by understanding these qualities, it helps us to understand what we must develop. So drawing this to a close, knowing the importance of wisdom can be our motivational force to push us to develop it. And over the course of our practice, by understanding these four qualities better, we can use it as a practical aspect to check whether we are on the right track. So we would see, when we reflect, we can ask ourselves, you know, am I lacking in faith? Is my compassion developing? Is my meditative tranquility developing well? And if we need to put in effort to strengthen certain areas, then with that check sheet, we know where we're lacking, where we're progressing well. We start to develop all these four areas in a much better and well-rounded way. So when all of these aspects are developing well, that means our development and our practice to develop wisdom is also progressing well. Now, as I said, this particular teaching on the characteristics of wisdom comes from Venerable Ingsun's work, Synopsis on the Practice of Wisdom in Buddhism. Now, this is just a very small excerpt from this particular teaching, which is actually being translated into English. So if you are interested and would like to read the teaching in full in English, it will be published in the publication Dharma Garden, and this is the website that you can access it. The actual publication should start to run in the November issue this year. So to wrap up, I'd like to wish you all a good evening and also to be able to use what you've learnt tonight well in your daily lives and to develop your wisdom. Thank you.